This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After covering the Middle East as Time's Jerusalem bureau chief from 2000 to 2006, my guest Matt Bynan-Reese has started a mystery series about a Palestinian history teacher turned detective. The first book in the series has just been published. It's called The Collaborator of Jerusalem. The story is set in motion when the teacher's good friend and former student, who is a Christian Palestinian, is accused of collaborating with the Israelis in the killing of a Palestinian guerrilla. The teacher is certain his friend is innocent and sets out to prove it. The book explores divisions within Palestinian culture. Reese explored divisions within Israeli as well as Palestinian culture in his nonfiction book, Cain's Field, Faith, Fratricide, and Fear in the Middle East. Let's start with a reading from The Collaborator of Jerusalem. The Palestinian accused of collaborating is talking to his former teacher.
In your class on the Arab Revolt of 1936, you said that the so-called Arab heroes were really just gangs. They went around robbing villages of their food and killing those who resisted, and all the time no one could take them on because these killers were portrayed as the brave men standing up against the Zionists and the army. They ended up killing more Palestinians than Jewish farmers or British soldiers. You said that if the people had stood up to them early on, the gangs would have backed down and there could have been peace. The criminals have made themselves the law. They shoot at some soldiers and it transforms them into the representatives of the national struggle. That makes them unassailable, and they can abuse anyone they want, particularly Christians who are weak already. That was my mistake. I didn't see that clearly enough, but I don't regret it.
Is this not only your character's view, but is this your view too?
Yes, I think having covered in particular the Intifada, which began in 2000, the violence there and the way that broke down really convinced me that, what's most important in terms of amongst the Palestinians is the way in which these gangs of gunmen relate to the ruling political parties and to the government itself, the Palestinian Authority. Essentially, as that reading that I just gave you demonstrates, inside, let's say, just Bethlehem, but I think this applies to most Palestinian towns, as long as those gunmen attacked and sometimes killed Israelis, they were able then to essentially rule as gangsters over the Palestinian towns, particularly taking advantage of groups that didn't have the same kind of power, the Christians in Bethlehem, for example. The gunmen in Bethlehem were nominally part of Yasser Arafat's Fatah party, but they were also outsiders. They came from a village just outside Bethlehem, so they weren't part of the Bethlehem community, and therefore they didn't have any qualms about running protection rackets and other kind of criminal activity. And so that struck me as being what really drove the fighting on the edge of Bethlehem and Jerusalem, which to the foreign media might have looked like it was, the essence of the Intifada, the Israelis fighting against the Palestinians. But I realized that really there's no such thing as the Palestinians. There's so many groups and so many interests. And what I wanted to try and express in this novel is the views of the people that I had met and admired amongst the Palestinians who wanted to have law and order and peace and didn't want their entire society to be surrendered to this kind of gun law.
The way the story goes in your book, some of these gunmen also control the auto shop business in Bethlehem. Do you see the gunmen as basically being like organized crime?
In many ways, they really did become like that, particularly during the Intifada. The central government, which is, of course, represented in my novel by the police chief, a friend of the main character, lost all its power, really, because the way in which the Palestinian Authority was set up was really not a government as we would know it, but actually a system of patronage. Arafat was the center of it all because he controlled all the money, which, of course, many years later, foreign donors wondered where it had all gone. Well, it went to funding this this method that he had always had over the decades, but which he brought with him from exile, which was to hand out cash to local bosses who would then depend upon him. in the Intifada, that got out of his control somewhat, because some of these local bosses realized that if they were allowed to fight against the Israelis, then they could use that, the kudos that that gave them on a local level, to run separate rackets and get more money out of the locals.
You also describe in your novel how Christians have become easy targets in places like Bethlehem because they're now minorities. And in your novel, it's a Christian who's accused of being a collaborator with the Israelis. What evidence have you seen that Christians have become targets in Palestinian communities?
First of all, the Christian minority, not only because of the large birth rate of the Muslim Palestinians, has been declining. Bethlehem is now, at best, 20% Christian Arab. Those Christians are leaving in large numbers, particularly, again, during the violence of the Intifada, because they tend to be slightly better off economically and perhaps also better educated than the local Muslims, who are mainly refugees, very poor refugees. And so they've gone into exile in droves to the United States, but also to South America. There have been attacks against Christians, but mostly it's a sense of separation between the two societies. When I first came here, there were still a lot of connections between those two communities, but the Muslims during the Intifada became very suspicious of the Christians. They thought perhaps there were links to the West, which made them easier to exploit by the Israelis as collaborators, and also that simply made them not as committed to the struggle of the Intifada as the Muslims were. And so those communities separated very much.
Your novel is inspired by events in 2003 during the Second Intifada. Last year, Hamas was the victor in the Palestinian elections. Do you see Hamas as functioning as gangs in the same way that you see Fatah as functioning as gangs?
No, Hamas has always set itself up in a different way from Fatah. It's never been a system of gangs and patronage in the same way that Fatah was, although, again, what we're seeing lately is that it is also dependent for its operations on money in the same way that Fatah is. But I think one of the things that has happened in the last few years, as Hamas has come closer to the center of power and has even gone into government, is that there's a pressure on the organization itself from the differences of opinion between those who are in the government, who might want to deal with Fatah and certainly with foreign countries, and maybe even with Israel in a very distanced kind of way, and those committed to continuing the fight at the ground roots of the organization. There's been a lot of conflict, for example, from pressure from below to attack American targets, for example, which Hamas has always said they didn't want to do. Their struggle is against Israel. Now that, again, has led to a breakdown within Hamas to a certain extent, which makes it harder even for Hamas to control certain of its operatives in Gaza when there are conflicts with Fatah. And that's why in the agreement that was made recently between the leaders of Fatah and the leaders of Hamas in Mecca, one of the things that was much clearer there was that it was hard for any of those leaders on either side to really keep their organization in line. And that's why they were prepared to go as far as they were in that agreement.
Hamas and Fatah entered into a power-sharing agreement brokered by the Saudis. But Hamas and Fatah were fighting each other during parts of January and February. What is the fighting between them about besides power? Is it just about power?
Well, it's also about money for several reasons. One reason is that the Fatah gunmen, as soon as Fatah was out of the government, were cut off from the money that they used to get from Arafat, and even subsequently from the Fatah organization, even after Arafat's death. After Arafat's death, it did cut off somewhat because the current president, Abu Mazen, decided he was going to cut back and try and keep the gunmen in order. Now, on Hamas's side, it's also about money, because since they became in government, the international community has tried to prevent financial contacts. It's cut off aid to the Palestinian Authority, at least aid insofar as it goes through the Hamas government. And so what Hamas is trying to do by having this agreement with Fatah and somewhat ceding power to Fatah is to get that money flowing again. And it should also be noted that one of the reasons that the Saudis wanted to do the deal is because if the European Union, the United States, was not going to be funding the Palestinian Authority, it was becoming increasingly clear that Iran was going to do it. And there's certainly one thing that the Saudis don't want in this area, this center of Middle Eastern conflict where the Palestinians are, is for the Iranians to have even more power over the situation than they already do.
If it weren't for the Saudis brokering this deal, this power-sharing deal, do you think that the Palestinians would have ended up in a civil war?
I think they were well into a civil war, actually. They don't have tanks, and they're not going to stand on one side of the sand dunes, with an army that we would recognize as a real war. But they had started a civil war, and I think that's why they realized how imperative it was that they do some kind of deal. They had certainly started a civil war in Gaza, in the West Bank, simply because of the geography. The towns are pretty much cut off from each other by Israeli forces. But in Gaza, where they have much more freedom to operate, they really were into a civil war, and it could very easily have escalated to the stage where Fatah lost and was simply kicked out of Gaza, or where the American money might have counted and perhaps Hamas would be driven underground. So yes, they were in a civil war, and that was what was pushing them to this agreement in Mecca.
In a note that precedes the beginning of your book, you write that all the crimes in the book are based on real events in Bethlehem. The killers really killed this way. Tell us about one of the killings in your book that's based on a real incident that you reported on.
Well, the first death is of a Fatah activist in a village called Irtas, and he was coming home. The reason that it sparks what happens here in the book is because it was done with the help of a Palestinian collaborator. What happened is that this man was creeping home in the twilight for the Ramadan iftar, the breakfast, at the end of the day of fasting. And he was shot by an Israeli sniper from up on the hill nearby. Now, what the Israelis did at that time during the Intifada was they would have a collaborator, a Palestinian, go up very close to the target so that they could identify him, so they wouldn't just shoot someone who happened to be walking along there at that time. And so a collaborator had gone up close, had identified to make sure that this was the right man, had then given a signal to the Israelis, and they had shot him. That started me to think about what would happen to those people who are thought of as collaborators and maybe even discovered as collaborators, because, of course, in Bethlehem, during the Intifada, there were instances of collaborators being killed, or people who were thought to be collaborators were killed and dragged through Manger Square, right in the center of town, by the Church of the Nativity. But one of the things that shocked me when I first discovered it was that sometimes the gunman would kill someone who they knew wasn't a collaborator, but they would then say that he was a collaborator because they couldn't find out who the real collaborators were, but they wanted to scare the collaborators so that they would stop collaborating.
What's the payoff for being a collaborator?
It's very small, actually, and that's one of the really pitiful things about the situation, is that Sometimes someone might be a collaborator simply because the Israelis say, we'll give you a permit for your mother to go to hospital for the treatment she needs. Sometimes it's a very small amount of money, really a pifflingly small amount of money, $20, $30. Very often it begins with something where if you're the collaborator, you think, this doesn't do anyone any harm. You know, they're asking me for something very inoffensive. But as soon as you give them that information, you've started on a road which ends up perhaps with you being asked to identify someone who's going to get killed. So the collaborators get sucked in that way. It's one of the differences between how the Israelis have been able to run their operations, intelligence operations inside the West Bank towns and inside the cells of Fatah and even of Hamas and Islamic Jihad. It's an advantage the Israelis have had, which the Americans don't have in Iraq, for example, in dealing with the insurgency there.
Your novel, The Collaborator of Bethlehem, is basically a detective novel, and the main character in it is very disillusioned with the Palestinians in power and with the Palestinian gunmen on the streets. And, you know, he thinks that the criminals have made themselves into the law, but they have this kind of righteous banner behind them because they also see themselves as freedom fighters against Israel. Have you met a lot of disenchanted Palestinians who feel similarly to the main character in your book?
Yes, I have. The main character is actually based on a very good friend of mine who inspired me, if you like, to explore this part of Palestinian thinking, because he was such a decent man. He was an independent thinker in an environment which is not conducive to independent thinking, you know, because you have men who do not want you to think independently, who are armed all around you. And I became very close with him over the years of the Intifada. He took me around Dehesha refugee camp. He really introduced me to people who are, I would say, challenging the gunmen very much of their city, however. They're not people who would ever leave, no matter how discontented they might be with the way things are in their hometown. They would never go and live in America or go and live in South America as others have done. They're very attached to it, and that's what gives them their validity in a way. I also became very friendly with people in the Palestinian Authority security services who are, let's say, in the second tier. They're not running each of the security services because those tend to be very political figures. They're actually men who were in exile with Arafat over many decades and came back thinking they were going to be policemen and ended up with this kind of dirty game going on where sometimes they were supposed to arrest bombers, other times they were supposed to let them go. And they became very discontented and over the years told me a lot of interesting stories about what it was really like in the Palestinian security forces and, of course, in society. So they, too, were men that I admired very much and felt that their voices were not ever heard. They didn't talk to any other foreign correspondents. And that was what I wanted to get across, not just the stories that they told me, but the essence of their personality, which I hope comes across in the novel.
Israel basically isn't much in the equation in your novel. It's really about disagreements between Palestinians. Israel kind of sets up the story because one of the characters is accused of being a collaborator with Israel. So there's plenty of hostility to Israel within the larger story. But the disagreements are between Palestinians, and you know, the killings are between Palestinians. Why did you make that decision to have the novel be about conflict between Palestinians as opposed to Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
As soon as I see Israelis and Palestinians on the same page, these cliches just jump out at me, and I wanted to make sure that there would be nothing like that in my book. I feel like this also reflects, in some ways, the reality of Palestinians now, because they're not allowed to move around from town to town in the West Bank. They don't, and there are no Israelis in the Gaza Strip. So they don't actually see Israelis very much. these days. What exercises them is what happens inside their own town because they can't go anywhere else. And so the way in which the gunmen work, their government or Hamas, whatever is going on in their own town, it really becomes so much more important to them than on a day-by-day basis what the Israelis do. That's not to say that the geopolitical situation here does not entwine them with the Israelis, but on a day-by-day basis, it's just them and all the other Palestinians around them.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's a great pleasure, Terry.
Matt Beinon-Reese spoke to us from Jerusalem. He's the author of the new detective novel, The Collaborator of Bethlehem. He was Time Magazine's Jerusalem bureau chief from 2000 to 2006 and is now a contributor to the magazine.